Hello there, my name is Chris Darby and I am a senior lecturer in drama and performance at Liverpool Hope University. This paper is entitled Knowing Me, Knowing You: Questions Raised by Walking the Labyrinth in the Maze. On the 29th of May 2021, I walked down the steps into the basement of an industrial building in Liverpool and, along with four other people, entered a darkened room with a pumping soundscape. Inadvertently stepping on a pressure pad, I activated a series of thin ring lights above me that lit the corridor ahead. This was Labyrinth, a playful audio-visual installation, private club experience, or puzzle developed as a collaboration between composer, DJ and producer Jacques Malchance and artist Chromavision. Located within the basement of the Invisible Wind Factory's substation, the work is a small maze of corridors containing different interactive installations that collectively change the overriding music soundscape that is heard throughout. As I will be using the word labyrinth quite a lot in this paper, to avoid confusion, I will refer to this particular work as the Liverpool Labyrinth. I want to talk about this work because I feel that it best exemplifies the argument that I want to articulate concerning the relationship between the topologies of the labyrinth and the maze. In this paper, I will be drawing from Sam McElhinney's paper, Labyrinths, Mazes and the Spaces in Between, and utilise George Gerster and Adrian Fisher's conception of labyrinthine as an umbrella term. I wish to argue that perceiving the labyrinth and the maze as part of a continuum of shifting topologies, rather than having a sharp delineation between them, enables for a more complete understanding of the hermeneutical process of learning and unlearning of spaces. It is also a useful model for examining walking as an aesthetic practice, and I will be using my experience at the Liverpool Labyrinth as a case study for this. I should state from the beginning that I will be looking at the labyrinth and maze as structures or patterns consciously built as such, rather than discussing the labyrinthine and maze-like qualities of everyday spaces. I am fascinated by why we are lured to walk spaces that are concerned with us losing ourselves, either in reflective thought or through sheer disorientation in the environment. There is an inherent ambiguity already present in the words labyrinth and maze. Jacques Malchance, co-creator of the Liverpool Labyrinth, reminded me that the Italian word for labyrinth, labirinto, reflects an amalgamation of both maze and labyrinth. And indeed, in numerous languages, labyrinth is very much an umbrella term for both topologies. However, a significant amount of scholars tend to emphasize the topological differences between them. A labyrinth is unicursal, with one route in and one route out. It is also generally a two-dimensional pattern in which the whole path is visible at once and walked across. The maze, by contrast, tends to be something three-dimensional that is walked into, in which the walker glimpses only sections of the path and is confronted with a multicursal network of others to choose from. These perceived differences between the labyrinth and the maze are reflected in some of their uses. The twisting, singular route of the labyrinth immediately implies a walk in which there is an inherent inevitability to its direction. Furthermore, its often depiction as a simple outline paves the way for the metaphoric, its meaning informed often by its location and the intention of those who walk it. Aside from the Cretan design, an iconic image of the labyrinth that has become fairly ubiquitous is the Chartres Labyrinth in Chartres Cathedral in France. It, like many similar labyrinths in French cathedrals during the medieval era, was purported to act as what Rebecca Solnit terms a compressed pilgrimage for those who were not literally able to travel to Jerusalem. The Chartres Labyrinth in particular became a catalyst for the modern labyrinth movement, led by figures such as Lauren Artres, founder of Viriditas, an organization that has utilized the labyrinth for spiritual growth and renewal of the individual, training and supporting labyrinth facilitators across the globe. The type of labyrinth walking they encourage tends to occur at a slow and meditative pace, in which the walker introspectively deliberates on their own life journey whilst tracing their route inwards and outwards towards the center. I attended a Viriditas workshop some years ago, and before entering the space, we each had to determine our own intention for our walk, which could take the form of a question, In The Way of the Labyrinth, Helen Curry presents some questions to assist the walker when using the labyrinth for problem solving. These include, quote, "Now that I know what I want, how can I get from here to there? What are my next steps? What are the obstacles? What did I need to do? What am I trying to create here?" End quote. Curry discusses this Gnostic sense, in which the meandering back and forth towards the centre is echoic of the walker learning about themselves. This echoes the model of the hermeneutical circle discussed by philosophers such as Martin Heidegger and Hans-Georg Gadamer, which broadly suggests that the journey of interpretation is a perceived circling back and forth between part and whole. A good example of this is the act of reading, in which our understanding of what is being read changes with each word we encounter, which then prompts a circling back to our understanding of the word within the whole sentence, and indeed that which we have learnt about the work as a whole. However, what I find particularly interesting about the labyrinth's design is that its spatial pattern is rarely a concentrated spiral towards a destination. The path moves in and out from the centre to different degrees, meaning that often the closer you are to the centre, the further you are from it. This complicates the circularity of interpretation in that this movement back and forth occurs with different degrees of intensity and duration. During my walk of the Chartres labyrinth, in the long stretches where I found myself on the outskirts of the pattern, invariably my mind turned to the journey as a whole and to what it represented. Whereas, close to the centre, a gentle kink in the path outwards gestured to this sense of wholeness before I was immediately brought back to focusing on my feet and the next section of the path. Therefore, what is significant about the labyrinth and the maze is that walking them introduces rhythm into the hermeneutical process. There is the bodily beat of the walker's pace, but the gentle, almost pendular rhythm of the labyrinth and the staccato rhythm of the maze invariably affects the degree to which our attention lingers on a part of the walk or the journey as a whole. This became particularly pronounced in my navigating through labyrinth in Liverpool, in which the pace of my walking and the paths I chose had a direct effect on the rhythm of the music I was interacting with. It's interesting that historically, the varying uses of the labyrinth were not always focused on solitary pilgrimage, but as demonstrations of skill or as sites of playful encounters. It is here, I would argue, that the overlaps with the maze become particularly prominent. Both Nigel Pennick and Helen Curry discuss the Scandinavian boulder labyrinths used by fishermen, who would tempt evil spirits to follow them in and then leave them behind trapped, managing to speedily exit the labyrinth without stepping over the walls or faltering. This is reminiscent of a game in Elizabethan England, where participants would evidence their skill in being able to manoeuvre through the labyrinth as quickly as possible while staying within the lines. As mazemaker Adrian Fisher and George Gerster observe, quote, "Down the ages, the labyrinth has simply been great fun. It is a place to run, to race, to chase someone else, and to try to catch them." End quote. For Jacques Marchant, one of the lures of the labyrinth lies in the sense of play that it encourages. This sense of the chase, or being competitive, was gently introduced through our interactions with the varying audiovisual stations in the Liverpool labyrinth. A swipe of a hand would trigger a kaleidoscope of lasers and a siren sound. A pressure pad would introduce a beat and distort my projected reflection on a wall. Different participants walking and interacting would introduce different amounts of intensity into the overall soundscape, with more popular stations leading to a small queue akin to a fairground. Marchant spoke of introducing two ruptures into the work, which he affectionately refers to as the Minotaur. In these instances, control over the music was wrestled away from the walker, with an alternative rhythm temporarily imposed to indicate a moment of being caught by something. This was far removed from my experience of the labyrinth walked in the Viriditas workshop. This felt more like the mazes I would run as a child. The crystallization of the maze as a path distinctive from the labyrinth became prominent in the Renaissance, in which a secularization of the labyrinth paved the way for the invention of different paths. Jenny Kingsley cites Galen McQueen's explanation for this as a signaling of religious expression becoming less of a physical experience and less experiential. Whilst the labyrinth is concerned with following a path, the maze's focus is on finding it. This means that, in effect, all mazes contain a labyrinth hidden within them, which immediately prompts questions concerning the how and the where of one's immediate location. The introduction of raised boundaries either side of the path emphasizes this, in which the concealment of the destination necessitates a process of mapping and remapping for the walker. Through a process of trial and error, in which dead ends are encountered and steps are retraced, the walker discovers the labyrinth that will take them to the center. Unlike the slow, often silent, meditative pace of the spiritual labyrinth, this particular discovered labyrinth is one beset by interruptions or anakalufa, which disrupt the act of following something predetermined. This immediately highlights the challenges of conceiving the labyrinth and the maze as separate topologies rather than part of a continuum. In On the Readings of Buildings and Pictures, Hans-Georges Gadamer draws attention to walking as a means to not only read a building, but to learn it. Quote, "We must always go where it is, walk around it, enter into it so that we gradually come to build it, so to speak." End quote. In their writings on this text, Jean-Claude Jens elaborates on this by referring to the importance of getting lost repeatedly in order to know a space. Therefore, from this perspective, the overall learning of a space requires multiple instances of certainty and uncertainty, a kind of wobbling through to a realization. If we equate this with my walking through labyrinth in Liverpool, then a hermeneutical process does reveal itself as I gradually began to locate my own labyrinth within this maze. This sense of building that Gadamer refers to became equated with my building of layers of music, modulated by my walking. What began as a slow, improvised amble through a dark and unknown space gradually became a purposeful act of playing with the environment. I began to find a route I liked that created a soundscape that appealed more to me. The conscious increase and decrease of my pace akin to the scratching of a DJ's fingers over a record. Crucially though, as Sam McIlhinney points out, this process of going from maze to labyrinth is not one way, and that the maze-like elements are always still present to a degree, echoing Gen's views on the need to get lost repeatedly. This was very much evident for me in the Liverpool labyrinth, as even when I had found what I felt to be a routine walking route, I was still confronted with uncertainty. I would still take wrong turns and be momentarily startled by my reflections in some of the floor-length mirrors within the space. What complicated matters slightly is that there was no literal centre to the Liverpool labyrinth which Malchance and Chromavision constructed. Instead, emphasis was placed on the overall puzzling out of the stations and how they contributed to the soundscape. The centre, therefore, was something that had to be felt or learn through the walking and the listening, as opposed to something pointed to on a map. My arrival at the centre, or my sense of a centre, was signalled by my understanding of the puzzle, becoming something Gnostic. Ironically, it is in this instance that we see a shift towards the mindset often ascribed to the spiritual labyrinth. Although in spiritual labyrinths, such as those utilised by Viriditas, there is a physical centre to walk to and from, the identity of this centre and what it represents for the walker is inherently subjective and often slowly materializes in their walk towards it. As Helen Curry observes, quote, "The idea of the center can bring up many questions. The center is whatever you find there." End quote. My experience of the labyrinth in Liverpool emphasizes the need for labyrinthine to be a catch-all term that resists fixity and instead acknowledges a continuum that encompasses both the topologies of the maze and the labyrinth. Both encourage particular ways of walking, but likewise are always at liberty to intermingle with each other. Walking a maze in the same manner as a spiritual labyrinth would, I believe, minimize a perceived binary of a right way and a wrong way, in which dead ends would be no different to the tight meanders of the labyrinth. Rather than a single path with lots of loose threads, the walk would instead be read as a palimpsest of lots of linear paths, some longer than others. There is perhaps still that sense of walking in the footsteps of others, as ascribed to the compressed pilgrimage. But likewise, the introduction of different routes acknowledges the individual in relation to this. By that same token, certain interruptions or minotaurs in the labyrinth can be useful in prompting the walker to further question where they are walking to and to what extent they are following a path determined for them by others. It also further allows for the sense of play that has been a significant part of the labyrinth's history, as well as evidencing skill. In The Labyrinth in Liverpool, the appearance of the Minotaur shook me out of my routine and immediately reminded me that even when I felt like I knew where to go and had all the answers, that there was still always something to learn when the rules of the game are momentarily changed. In closing, I want to recount an observation about my experience arriving at the Liverpool Labyrinth itself. I work in Liverpool, but because of the current climate, I have been working remotely outside of the city. This visit to see the work was my third into the city itself in a year, and I did get lost. This surprised me, as I had lived in the city for 6 years prior to this, and had visited the Invisible Wind Factory a few times before. Like many going in and out of lockdowns and periods of isolation, the place I had returned to had become maze-like once more. Thank you.